I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
It's an act being called deliberate and dangerous, a place of worship, the target of vandalism, and not for the first time. The North York Mosque cleaning up for a second time in just 4 months. Good evening. Both incidents caught on security camera.
There is a sense of unease in the aftermath. While no one was physically hurt, this is having an impact. CTV's Janice Golding is live near Jane and Wilson with more. Janice.
Hi, Michelle. While the imam here won't go so far as to call these hate crimes, he does say they are ugly acts of deliberate vandalism, which are both worrisome and scary.
This is the rock that was used.
Imran Ali, the imam at the Toronto and Regent Islamic congregation, shows us a large rock estimated to be between 12 and 15 pounds that was thrown through his mosque's front window.
You're watching over your shoulders because you don't know what can happen. And places of worship should not have to be vigilant for something like this.
This surveillance video, captured just before 8 p.m. Tuesday, November the 9th, appears to show a man approach the front door of the mosque with a rock in his hand, which he hurls toward the building before quickly walking away. All of this in clear view of the building's custodian, who you can see trying to stay clear of the suspect.
That's what's very troublesome. If someone is going to come to do harm, and even in the presence of others, they're still driven to do something dangerous like that.
Mayor John Tory visited the mosque on Sunday to show his support and tweeted, "This hatred and bigotry has absolutely no place in Toronto." And yet, this is the second such incident at the mosque in under 3 months. This surveillance video, captured by security cameras on Tuesday, August the 17th, around 2:30 p.m., shows a man repeatedly smash at three separate windows to the rear of the building with a brick.
Yeah, it's so sad. It's heartbreaking too.
It's everybody's job to come together and trying to figure out a way to, make sure that doesn't happen. But it's going to happen, and, I'm just glad nobody got hurt.
Police at 31 Division say they take incidents like these very seriously and are working with the community and the mosque to help worshippers feel safe.
It does have tremendous psychological trauma, I think. It's one of those things where when that fear resonates with people, it stops them from doing the things they need to do.
So he actually broke this window here.
Imam Ali says he doesn't know what the motives behind these acts of vandalism were, but says he's not angry.
We obviously are not happy this was done, but only the glass was broken.
Police are still investigating the first incident, but no one has been arrested. Police did arrest a man within a few hours of the more recent incident. 50-year-old Jeffrey Petit was charged with mischief under $5,000. He appeared in a Toronto courtroom on November the 10th. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Janice. And you can find more details and watch that video again on our website. That's all at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Next to deadline day for thousands of workers in long-term care, time has run out for those who haven't received a COVID-19 vaccine.
Effective now, they need to prove that they've had a first dose. And if they don't, they can no longer report for work unless there's a medical exemption. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Nathan, that would have impacted nearly 2,500 long-term care employees who refused to get even a first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. And tonight, the Minister of Long-Term Care says nearly a dozen long-term care homes needed some stabilization. Deadline day for long-term care. Staff who do not have a first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine will no longer be allowed to enter nursing homes in this province. And as of today, 98% of the long-term care workforce has at least one dose.
Residents and family members can feel much better now knowing that the vaccination rate level is what it is.
The mandatory vaccination policies are intended to clamp down on outbreaks by ensuring those working with the most vulnerable are fully vaccinated. On a macro scale, the deadline made an impact. But when you drill down into the numbers, it turns out hundreds of long-term care homes are now potentially facing a staffing shortage. More than 105,000 staff, students, and volunteers had a primary dose at the beginning of November, leaving 2,500 workers unvaccinated. That includes medical exemptions as well. 325 long-term care homes in Ontario had unvaccinated staff members, while 17 homes had one-dose vaccination rates of below 90%.
To be honest, because of the lead time, because of the hard work of the operators and because of the staff, we haven't experienced significant issues at this point.
Advocates say those healthcare workers might be finding work elsewhere.
What we see here is that our long-term care home workers who do not want to get vaccinated simply slide over to other types of healthcare, like going to hospitals and other acute care centers. That's really a problem.
At Queen's Park today, the government was under fire for not making vaccinations mandatory for all healthcare workers.
Long-term care residents and staff are safer because of that mandate. Newborns in hospitals should be safe too, Speaker.
This is not an easy determination to make. We have to weigh, on a basis of an assessment of risk, what is more dangerous, to require vaccination or to give up on all of those other people that need our help. We are not going to give up on them.
The Premier insists he'll promote the vaccine to all healthcare and education workers, but will not mandate it. And those long-term care employees who do have a mandate now have another deadline coming up. December 13th is a date they have to prove they are fully vaccinated or they could be shown the door. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. Across the province, more than 88.7% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and more than 85.5% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 11.1 million people in Ontario.
The numbers are stark and they are concerning, something many of us take for granted, the ability to put food on the table.
But here in the GTA, that's becoming a real struggle for more people. And with prices at grocery stores only climbing, there are fears about what happens next. CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more on this. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, number of people who are visiting food banks are going up, and they say the people who work here are saying that it's only confirming what they already knew.
Volunteers at the Daily Bread Food Bank are moving quickly, sorting and stocking donations. Here, visits are way up, something CEO Neil Hetherington noticed on one of his hardest days.
About 2 weeks after the first lockdown, when the food bank line went right around the corner and down the street.
With the largest crowd he'd ever seen, reality quickly hit home.
I walked that line to greet individuals and saw an acquaintance of mine, somebody who I never thought needed a food bank, but they did.
According to a new report, there have been 1.45 million food bank visits in the past year. That is a 45% increase from the year before.
This is a devastating report for the City of Toronto. We have seen more food bank users this year than any other year in our recorded history.
It is also 1.5 times higher than the all-time record set back in 2010. Hetherington says that the amount of food going out the door is staggering.
It is now at a point where 60,000 pounds of food are being delivered every single day to Torontonians.
And every 6 days, the warehouse is completely replenished.
This report is only covering the first year of the pandemic. And now that restrictions are easing and inflation is rising, the food bank is actually seeing more visits.
To me, it says that the crisis is not over.
This past month, Canada's inflation rate moved up to 4.4%, making everything a little more expensive. Talia Bronstein says the numbers keep climbing.
We are still seeing very high food bank use. I think we're on track to set another record this year.
And it was in June of this past year that we hit another record high of 124,500 client visits in a single month.
They say that government interventions like improvements to affordable housing, income supports, coupled with stable work, can reverse this trend, a trend that is moving quickly in the wrong direction.
And some of the other information gathered in this report was quite startling. They said that many people, after they paid for their things like their housing, were living on less than $10 a day, and also that a third of people who visited the food bank at times would go for more than a day without eating at all. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Straight ahead, a roaming pack of wild animals causing concern in Pickering. Yes, those are boars, and they're being taken seriously. What's being done in an attempt to corral the creatures?
But first, we want to turn to an unfolding weather emergency in British Columbia, parts of the province virtually cut off amid heavy flooding.
In part of a country known for its rainfall, this has been relentless, the deluge prompting evacuations and dramatic roadside rescues. CTV's Raheem Ladani is tracking the situation and joins us in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, this is a very fluid situation. In fact, helicopter rescues with help from the Canadian military are happening right now in one part of the Fraser Valley, while residents in other areas are doing what they can to protect their homes. This section of Highway 7 in Agassiz, BC has been blocked off after heavy rainfall triggered at least two landslides, trapping more than 250 people in their vehicles, many of them stuck since Sunday afternoon.
Heavy search and rescue teams have been deployed to assist, and we are looking at the possibility of air rescue if needed.
That's our sewer plant currently.
In Merritt, a city in the province's south-central interior, all 7,000 residents are being told to leave after the wastewater treatment plant collapsed, meaning people couldn't turn on their faucet or flush the toilet without water backing up into their homes.
The gauges that we actually had that we were trying to use from the BC River Centre, they simply maxed out.
All the stone has come down, so I don't want to wreck a tire.
Nearly 200 millimeters of rain has fallen, leaving parts of the Coquihalla Highway nearly wiped out, even stranding a minor hockey team on a bus in Hope, BC since yesterday.
These kids just want to go home. A lot of them have school that they're missing today, and a lot of them have tests that they've been telling me they have to get done and make up now.
Meanwhile, residents in Abbotsford are using sandbags to try and protect their homes, with the city declaring a local state of emergency.
Literally in about 15 minutes, it went from the sides of the streets to the whole street gone, and within an hour it went up to our waist and then up to our shoulders almost in front of our house.
Environment Canada noting parts of the province has dealt with more rain over the last 2 days than what's normal for the entire month of November. Now, the rain is expected to taper off soon, but that won't be the end of it. Environment Canada says wind gusts of up to 90 kilometers per hour are expected to follow in parts of BC, and officials are preparing for potential power outages. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Here at home, it feels a lot cooler, and it is unsettled, which means the potential for flurries. Michelle Jobin is here. What are you seeing out there this hour?
Well, Michelle, we're still dealing with snow squalls off of the Upper Great Lakes, and some of them at this point are now affecting areas of the GTA, specifically northern York region, in and around the Newmarket area, this persistent stream that's coming off of Georgian Bay. So we do have some watches and warnings that are, in fact, of particular concern has been this area, this squall that has been coming off of Lake Huron, and that is where we do have the warning in effect up to 15 centimeters. Meters of snow, and of course these cause whiteout conditions and also poor slippery conditions on the road as well, so it's a concern as we head through the overnight period. We are looking at temperatures that are cooling right now. Winds are quite gusty, helping to drive those squalls. They should taper off as we get through the evening, but the warnings are still in place. Right now it's a little bit warmer near the shores of Lake Huron, so that's helping the situation somewhat. It's 4 degrees on the island right now, 2 at Pearson Airport, going for a low of -2, and we could see flurries over night in the GTA. We'll talk more about that coming up. Back to you.
Thanks, Michelle. To Pickering next, where some wild pigs are on the prowl, but it is no joke, according to wildlife experts.
Quite the opposite. While the sightings are making for good banter among neighbors, it turns out the boars are considered an invasive species. CTV's Mike Walker is live with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, both residents and provincial officials are concerned because the invasive wild boars can be destructive and also pose a risk to native wildlife and ecosystems and become an even bigger problem if they multiply. So efforts are now underway to trap and remove the boars.
Four of them were digging this up, and they did that in a matter of minutes.
Mary Delaney didn't expect to see this from her kitchen window this morning. Four wild boars digging up her front lawn.
And my husband, of course, immediately ran out the door to chase them away because they can do an incredible amount of damage in a very short period of time.
This wasn't Delaney's first encounter with the wild boars. She took this video last Monday on a rural road in North Pickering, where more than 24 were spotted.
They're absolutely new to this area, and they've got tusks, and they reproduce like rabbits, and they go year-round. So this is a really, really serious situation.
Several sightings have been reported to the Ministry of Natural Resources and Pickering Animal Services near the community of Brome this month. Officials believe the pigs are Eurasian wild boars, which are not native to Ontario, but it's not clear where they came from.
We have confirmed that we have seen 14 wild boar. We do believe that these ones are not born in the wild and they were bred and born in captivity.
They're a concern because they're a very destructive animal. They also spread diseases, so they carry a number of pathogens, and they can spread this to other livestock, they can spread it to native wildlife, and in some cases they can spread it to humans.
Dr. Aaron Cohen is a research scientist with the MNR, which is now setting up traps in areas where the boars have been spotted, planning to capture the entire pack at once.
Because they carry diseases and because they're an invasive species, they would likely be euthanized. They can reproduce really quickly and they can become a really big problem.
Until then, farmers like Rob Murray are on alert. He's been checking his fields and livestock ever since he crossed paths with the pack a week ago.
They can destroy a crop in a matter of days, hundreds of acres. And there goes your profit.
Hoping the invasive boars will be trapped and removed soon, but ministry officials say corralling the wild pigs will take some time. Right now, the sightings are only occurring in North Pickering, which is largely rural. Provincial officials are asking anyone that crosses paths with the wild boars to report the location to the MNR. Reporting live in Pickering, I'm Mike Walker. Back to you.
Thank you, Mike. Later tonight, it was an unnerving time for those at York University. A series of sexual assaults in the year 2001, creating a sense of fear and uncertainty on campus. Our detective series looking back at that investigation and what ultimately led to an arrest.
Ontario is now one of only two provinces that haven't signed up for the federal government's child care plan.
Alberta announced today it's joining the program that would see parents pay $10 a day. CTV's Glenn McGregor reports.
You, Prime Minister, welcome to Alberta.
Jason Kenney was initially resistant to sign on, but today a change of tone.
This is a good day for Alberta families. Affordable child care makes a big difference for working parents.
Alberta's premier wanted a no-strings-attached deal for child care funding, similar to Quebec's arrangement, but today agreed to participate with the condition that Alberta's many privately run daycares, and not just nonprofits, would be funded too.
We have by far the largest percentage of child care spaces offered by private operators, and they initially did not qualify in the initial deal that was offered. We didn't want to exclude all of those parents.
The federal government will send $3.8 billion to Alberta over 5 years. The average fee paid by parents will drop by 50% next year and fall to an average of $10 per day by 2026. It will create more than 42,000 new spaces in the province. The finance minister pitched the funding as an important economic investment that helps children and lets more women go back to work.
It is as much a critical piece of infrastructure as a road or a grain elevator or a railway.
For Justin Trudeau, a further fulfillment of his plan to establish an affordable child care system right across the country.
The fact that we were able to do this with Alberta today is a clear indication that it is within grasp for all families across the country.
The deal leaves only New Brunswick and Ontario without agreements to share in the $30 billion Ottawa earmarked for the National Child Care Program. Ontario is quibbling over its $10.2 billion allotment and wants credit for already funding its kindergarten programs for 4- and 5-year-olds.
It's probably politics. I would guess that the Ontario government wants a win before the upcoming election in Ontario, and they're sort of trying to time it so that it has the maximum impact for them.
Not only are there more kids in Ontario, but their parents are paying some of the highest rates in the country, nearly $1,600 per month on average in Toronto, compared to just $181 in Montreal. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, Ottawa.
Returning to the pandemic, this is the deadline for federal workers to be fully vaccinated. If not, more than 1,000 core public service employees could be on unpaid leave. They could also be unable to access employment insurance benefits. About 267,000 workers have declared their vaccination status. Just over 3,000 of those have requested some kind of an accommodation so that they can work without receiving both shots. As of November 3rd, the vast majority of federal public servants were reported to be fully vaccinated.
When it comes to the numbers, Public Health Ontario is reporting 552 new cases in its most recent update. 340 of those are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 21,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is now sitting at 2.2%.
342 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to over 593,000 over the course of the pandemic. Three additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,937 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 85 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 51 in Peel Region. York has 49 new cases, with 30 in Niagara, 17 in Durham. There are 15 new cases in Halton Region and 12 in Hamilton.
In Austria, a nationwide lockdown was imposed today on the unvaccinated. About 2 million people in the country, of roughly 9 million, are now only allowed to leave their homes for necessary reasons. They include traveling to work or shopping for essential items. The goal is to counter a surge in infections as winter approaches and cases rise across the continent. Austria has a vaccination rate of only about 65% of the population. That's one of the lowest in Western Europe.
Britain raised its national threat level today to severe, meaning an attack is seen as highly likely.
The move follows what authorities say was a terrorist attack outside a Liverpool hospital.
What yesterday showed above all is that the British people will never be cowed by terrorism. We will never give in to those who seek to divide us with senseless acts of violence.
An explosion engulfed a taxi in flames. It killed the passenger whose beliefs were brought the device into the vehicle. The driver was injured but is now out of hospital. Four men in their 20s have been arrested, and police say they strongly believe the attacker was 32-year-old Imad Al-Swilmi.
In the U.S., Steve Bannon appeared in federal court today on charges of defying a congressional subpoena.
Joe Biden ordered Merrick Garland to prosecute me from the White House lawn when he got off Marine One. And we're going to go on the offense. We're tired of playing defense. We're going to go on the offense on this and stand by.
Bannon turned himself in after being indicted by a federal grand jury. He was charged after refusing to appear before a House committee investigating the siege of Capitol Hill in January. A second count relates to refusing to produce documents. Bannon is one of more than 30 people close to former U.S. President Donald Trump ordered by the committee to testify.
A warning about the disturbing details in this next story. Our multi-platform series, The Detective, revisiting some of the crimes that shocked the city while hearing from one of the people at the center of those investigations.
Tonight, a series of sexual assaults 2 decades ago that sparked fear on the campus of York University and the major mistake the suspect made that eventually led to his arrest. CTV's Austin Delaney reports.
In the year 2000, female students at York University's Keele campus were gripped by fear.
Police now say the York U rapist is responsible for 8 sex attacks on campus since July 21st. The level of violence has escalated with each assault.
In a 3-month period, escalated from robberies and groping to a violent sexual assault.
He drags her over into the trees, demands her PIN number and her ATM card. And then he rapes her at knife point.
CP24's Steve Ryan was at the time an investigator with the Sex Crimes Unit and was heading a task force aimed at catching the man dubbed the York Rapist.
But Steve, this gas station's like 2 minute walk, really, 2 minute run from where the rape happened.
Yeah, that's right. It's not too far from where the assault happened at all. So this was a key piece of evidence for us. So what we found out was that he came right to this gas station using the survivor's ATM card with her PIN number, and he made several attempts to get money out of her account.
And aimed at the ATM, a security camera capturing the suspect's image. His picture was everywhere, on every newscast, and tips were flooding in. In one tip, the caller appeared to have inside knowledge of the wanted man.
So we get a call in the afternoon saying Philip Forensky says he did it, and he's in Hamilton. Now we got to find Philip Foremski.
They find Foremski, who comes to the police station with his mom and agrees to a DNA swab.
So in this particular case, the officers came to me and said, we finished with Foremski. He's downstairs with his mom. I thought, why not go down and let's see what he has to say.
So you open the door, and you've seen a picture of your wanted suspect from the gas station. What do you see there?
I was pretty much convinced it was the same guy.
The 18-year-old quickly confesses to the robbery, but says he did not sexually assault her.
And his mom said to me, and I'll never forget this, I'm paraphrasing, of course, whoever this person is needs to be caught. They're dangerous, and I worry about the students at the university. My heart basically aches for them.
For Emski, who lived with his mom in a home close to the gas station and where her son's image was captured, and close to the university where the assaults were happening, soon confessed he was the York U rapist. The person who called the tip line remained anonymous. For Emski took a plea deal and served 5 years in prison. Austin Delaney, CTV News.
And you can subscribe to The Detective on iHeart or wherever you listen to podcasts. And visit our website for more details from the investigations.
Still ahead, overcoming inequality in healthcare. The new hub at a Toronto hospital that tailors cancer resources for women of color.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, your credit score is one of the most important numbers when it comes to your finances. A woman who has a low score was shocked when she was charged more than 20% interest to buy a van. There are ways to try and improve your score. I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
We reached a just below seasonal high of 6 degrees in the city of Toronto, officially 5.5 at Pearson, 5.8 downtown. So that's just a little bit more than we were yesterday and just shy of our seasonal norm, nowhere near a record of 19.3 set in 1990. But we do have a warm-up on the way, I need to tell you about this week. It's going to come with some rain. As we get through the overnight period tonight, showers, flurries, or a mix of the two, depending on where you are in the GTA, with an overnight low of -2. Tomorrow, a high of 7 degrees, and we'll see some clearing later on before the next system moves in. That's going to be bringing us some rain, but as I mentioned, also warming temperatures. So I'll tell you more about that coming up in your full forecast. I'll have all those details for you very soon. Stay with us.
Do you know yours? A credit score is a number between 300 and 850 that tells lenders if you're a good credit risk. The higher the number, the better.
And if you have a low credit score, it means you could have trouble getting credit. And you may also have to pay higher interest rates for loans. Pat Foran has one viewer's story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, a woman contacted us with concerns about a loan she took for a van. She admits she has a poor credit rating, but she's still shocked the van will cost her almost twice as much because of high interest charges.
I don't want to pay double for a van. I can't afford to do that.
Teresa Loth of Listowel says 3 years ago she needed a van. When she went to buy it, she knew she may have to pay a higher interest rate because in the past she was late making payments and she has a low credit score.
We knew going in that it would cost us more. I knew I'd probably pay about 20% and I was okay with that.
The price of the van was $17,694, but with other fees and taxes, the total came to almost $23,000. Loth took a six-year loan, and the total cost of borrowing is more than $17,000 for a total amount payable of almost $40,000. The annual interest rate is almost 22%. Loth says she is shocked by how much she still owes for the van.
And for them to tell me after paying $20,000, I still owe another $20,000? After 3 years, it's not kind of insane.
Once you have a low credit score, it can take years to improve it.
The poorer your credit rating, the more you're going to pay, the higher interest rates are going to be for whatever products you get.
Lori Campbell with Bromwich & Smith Licensed Insolvency Trustees says missing even one payment can affect your credit score.
Whether it's a cell phone, a credit card payment, a loan installment, whatever the case is, you've got to make your payments on time every time.
To improve your credit score, use credit wisely, pay your bills on time, always at least make the minimum monthly payment, limit your number of credit applications, and review credit reports for errors. Loth feels it's unfair that people who have had credit issues in the past should have to pay higher interest rates on loans.
It's a predatory system going after people that are struggling, the working poor. It doesn't make any sense.
You used to have to pay to get your credit score, but now Equifax will let you check it online for free. You can also ask your bank. It's something you may want to look at each year to make sure your number is going up and not down. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Both city and provincial officials were in the Distillery District today to promote the Show Love TO campaign.
We're going to have a full and complete recovery. It cannot take place
without the smaller businesses in the main streets of the city being fully engaged.
The initiative encourages residents to show their love for the city by supporting local businesses and artists. People are also encouraged to shop online from local stores, many of whom were given funding to launch their own e-commerce platforms.
Now, I want to show love to the weather, but when it gets below the freezing mark, it's hard for me to do that.
Mm-hmm. But I think what's kind of neat about this week is it's getting cold, but then we'll have a day of, ooh, this is warm.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be like that here in the GTA. Elsewhere, it's going to be a little more complicated. But Nathan, my message to you is it's going to be a long winter for you then, because we're going to have to deal with a lot of below zero. But we'll get to that later on. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Trane. So we've been dealing with a lot of wintry precipitation in some parts of the region, of course, with squalls off of the upper Great Lakes. And for some of us, that's going to continue. And we're also looking at the potential of showers, a mix of rain and snow and or flurries for the GTA. Right now around the region like this, 2 degrees in Toronto, feeling like -2 with the wind chill, 3 in Windsor, feeling like -1 in North Bay, feeling like -5. So overnight tonight, -2 is where we're headed. That's a little bit below seasonal. And it's going to feel like -6 with the wind chill. So you definitely want to bundle up as you get ready to head out the door tomorrow, because it's going to feel quite cool. And we have this chance of flurries. Now, if you're in northern York region, northern Durham region, these are areas you could see accumulating snow. And I'll take a look at that for you in just a second. Here's a look at our highs throughout the region as we get into the day tomorrow. 7 degrees in Toronto, so that's spot on seasonal. We're a little bit cooler in parts of southwestern Ontario. And that's been the case today as well, also in the northeast. In the southwestern Ontario, that's helping to fuel some of these squalls that we're seeing. Here's a look at the watches and warnings we have right now, and they're separated into currently and later on. This is for Wednesday, and there's the potential for freezing rain for those of us in the Ottawa Valley, extending through the Nickel Belt into northeastern Ontario, and it also extends into Quebec. But what we have is a broader winter weather travel advisory here in yellow for the Barrie, Innisfil area, extending down to northern York region, and also in and around areas off of Lake Huron. For the warning for Goderich over towards Stratford, southern Perth and Huron counties, this is up to 15 centimeters of snow total. Elsewhere, 2 to 4 centimeters, around 10 in the London area. This is tapering off as we get through the overnight period tonight, and things will improve. But as you can see, this one squall really reaching all the way down into the Niagara region, and then this one off of Georgian Bay reaching down into the GTA, even affecting the Toronto area. As we get into tomorrow, things change a little bit. We're dealing with this surface trough right now. Things do clear up a little bit, but I want to put our forecast radar in motion and show you what is on the way for us. So these squalls start to taper off a little bit through the overnight period. Winds shift to be more out of the west. We'll be still dealing with this one into tomorrow morning. And then some clearing. We get a little bit of cloud cover tomorrow. And then as we get into Wednesday, it's rainfall. Winds are coming out of the southwest with this front coming in, and it's going to be much warmer as we get through the day. But it's a steady stream of rain on Wednesday. It's going to be freezing rain for the Ottawa Valley. So flurries as we get into the morning tomorrow, then clearing. 7 degrees tomorrow, overnight 1, and then 14 degrees and showers for Wednesday. We have those showers carry on with a warm overnight low of 9 on Thursday, and then we clear out a little bit more as we get into the weekend. Flurries possible on Friday, but a little bit of a roller coaster with our temperatures this week. Nathan, back to you.
Thanks, Michelle. Also tonight, Taylor Swift takes back her music and continues her tear in the industry. A look at her latest success. It's an effort to lift the veil on inequalities in our health system, specifically black women affected by breast cancer.
A new resource at One Toronto Hospital hoping to have a meaningful impact across the country. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
For generations, medical texts and other materials only depicted the experiences of white women going through breast cancer. And it's only in recent years that key differences in the cancer journeys of black women have been taken seriously.
Our motto is every woman, every chance. So every woman who is dealing with cancer has a chance for the best possible care. In the last year, I think many institutions have finally started having these important conversations about race and racism. So we thought it was a great opportunity to start thinking about the experiences of black women.
Women's College Hospital has created a new hub of resources specifically for black women. For example, the significance of hair care products is important for many black women. And for Dawn Barker, the age of screening is a particular concern.
I said, should I start having mammograms now that I've turned 40?
And I was told, no, not until you're 50.
She was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 44 and went through a lumpectomy, chemotherapy, and radiation. Her point is that, among Black women, breast cancer is often detected at an earlier age and can be much more aggressive. She urges Black women to advocate for themselves. She would also like to see more Black physicians and depictions of Black patient cases in medical texts.
I personally felt underrepresented in the healthcare system. Black women are rarely used in brochures and pamphlets and resources that we receive.
That's why the Every Breast Counts resource hub is so important.
There is very little research that has been done to date in Canada. We see lots from the U.S. and lots from the U.K. that we borrow from.
Dr. Aisha Lofters hopes research being done through Women's College will lead to improvements in healthcare for Black patients in Toronto and across Canada. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
To sports now, the Ottawa Senators' next three games are being postponed due to an ongoing COVID-19 outbreak. Ottawa has had 10 players test positive in the past 10 days. It was supposed to play New Jersey tomorrow night, Nashville on Thursday, and the New York Rangers on Saturday. The Senators canceled their practice today to try and contain the outbreak.
The newest members of the Hockey Hall of Fame will be inducted tonight. Jerome Iginla, Kevin Lowe, Doug Wilson, Kim St. Pierre, and Marian Hossa are going in as players. Edmonton Oilers general manager Ken Holland is joining the builders category. The inductees were originally announced in June of 2020, but the ceremony was delayed a year because of COVID-19.
Canada's men's soccer team got a pep talk today from a special visitor. Justin Trudeau met with the squad during his visit to Edmonton. The Prime Minister was there as the team prepares for a World Cup qualifying match against Mexico tomorrow night. Canada defeated Costa Rica Friday night at Commonwealth Stadium. Mexico lost to the U.S.
Taylor Swift wanted to take control of her music, and she certainly has.
With a re-recording of her 2012 album, Red, not only is she showcasing her work, but she's dominating the industry in the process. CTV's Andrea Case joins us now with a breakdown. Andrea.
Good evening from the other side of the studio, you two. Well, a decade ago, brokenhearted, Taylor Swift said she would cry between interviews thinking about the man who broke her heart. Well, today, older and wiser, she's not thinking about the unnamed man, saying, I haven't thought about their experience. T-Swift has moved on.
And I bet you think about me.
A lot of people have been thinking about Taylor Swift. This new music video, directed by actress Blake Lively, was released today. And this past Friday, Swift's record-breaking album, Red, Taylor's version, was released. With more than 90.8 million global streams on Spotify, it is the most streamed album in a day by a female, breaking a record she set in 2020. And fans were not just streaming the new 30-track album. In all, 122.9 million streams of Swift's music set another record. Re-recording the album 10 years after Red was first released now allows her to own the rights to the music. And with time, her perspective has changed. The 31-year-old says she listened to what fans had to say and now has given them what they want. An example releasing the song All Too Well in its original 10-minute form.
So we are again on that little town street.
She played it in its entirety on Saturday Night Live this past weekend. It was her fifth time as a musical guest.
Roll camera.
The 11-time Grammy-winning musician has directed a number of projects before.
Don't shoot anymore.
But this was the first time she wrote and directed a short film, which accompanies the song.
I can make the bad guys good for a weekend.
Swift is remaking all of her first six albums, two down, four to go. As for what she will release next, fans are speculating it'll be her 2014 album called 1989. Okay, so Michelle was just asking me this. Now, anyone who does the timeline math deduces that the heartbreaker was actor Jake Gyllenhaal, but she's not saying. Now, he was out at an event this weekend, and it appears he too has moved on, choosing not to discuss the song's re-release or the gossip which has resurfaced about their relationship. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
After the break, a real estate frenzy. What new numbers reveal about home sales and the potential housing landscape going forward?
TV Tonight.
tonight. It's Monday. Let's start the week off right by warming up with some great TV. It all starts at 7 tonight on CTV.
It means now from the car to here, you're watching over your shoulders because you don't know what can happen.
Updating our top stories, members of a North York mosque are expressing their concern after a large rock was hurled through the building's window last week. A suspect who was caught on video has been arrested and charged in the incident.
This was an important step. This and the boosters, which we put in place back in the back in August.
Today was the deadline for long-term care staff to get at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. Unvaccinated staff are now barred from nursing homes in the province. However, the move has left hundreds of homes dealing with a staffing shortage.
They're a concern because they're a very destructive animal. They compete with native wildlife for resources. They destroy agricultural fields. They destroy private property.
The province is working to trap and remove at least 14 wild boars spotted roaming east of Toronto. The animals were first spotted in Pickering on November 5th and are considered an invasive species.
Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
In business, the country's record-setting housing market is showing no signs of slowing down. Greg Bunnell from B&M Bloomberg has the details.
It's been a record year for Canadian home sales, and the year isn't even over yet. New numbers from the Canadian Real Estate Association show more than 580,000 homes have changed hands since the start of the year. Now, that beats the previous record set for all of 2020. And activity continued to pick up in October. Well, the desire for more space and low borrowing costs have fueled a real estate frenzy. But when it comes to those low interest rates, the ground may be shifting. Bank of Canada says it's getting closer to raising its borrowing costs. It's a billion-dollar deal that adds Firehouse Subs to the restaurant brand's portfolio. The parent company of Tim Hortons is acquiring the Florida-based sub chain in an all-cash transaction. Restaurant brand CEO Jose Sill tells B&M Bloomberg he's impressed by the growth at Firehouse Subs and expects that growth story to continue. Shares of restaurant brands gained some 2% on the day. Shares of Casper Sleep surged almost 90% today. That's the strongest one-day showing since going public. That on the news, the company is being taken private after a troubled run as a publicly traded company. Casper has posted a loss for every quarter since going public in early 2020. Well, a private equity firm is taking Casper private for $6.90 a share. That's far below the IPO price of 12 bucks. The Canadian dollar was up 43 basis points to 79.89 U.S., American benchmark oil gained 9 cents a barrel to close at 80.88. Alberta's heavy crude, Western Canadian Select, was up 82 cents, settling at 61.69 U.S. And the TSX Composite Index lost 85 points to close at 21,683, with financials and tech stocks leading the way lower. That's the latest from B&M Bloomberg. I'm Greg Bunnell.
Today's first dose deadline for long-term care workers is being closely followed. What will it mean for the sector?
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Jamie Goodfreund. Reshmi, you're going to be digging into that.
Yes, Nathan, we have a panel of palliative care physicians joining us on CP24 tonight to talk about this deadline and what they hope will come out of this vaccine mandate, as there are concerns about staffing issues with the most vulnerable at risk as the numbers go up in this province.
And Jamie, that new report around the use of food banks is being labeled a call to action.
Yeah, we're talking about record-breaking numbers for visits to Toronto's food banks, and we're learning more about this in the annual Who's Hungry report that was released today by the Daily Bread Food Bank and North York Harvest. So we're going to be speaking with the CEO of the Mississauga Food Bank and also the executive director for North York Harvest to talk about the challenges and demand on food banks, especially as they head into the holiday season. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Reshmi. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
Just ahead, astronauts interrupted. Why research and work aboard the ISS was put on hold with crews seeking shelter.
Tonight, inside the flood zone as relentless rain devastates southern BC. We'll have the latest from the ground with hundreds trapped and mass evacuations underway. That story and more later on CTV National News.
And a reminder, the CTV News at 6 podcast is available as a download every weeknight. And you can also listen to the newscast live on News Talk 1010.
Get Toronto's top stories, breaking news alerts, and watch live. Download the CTV News app. Coming up on CP24 tonight, protecting elderly residents, how the new vaccine deadline could cost long-term workers their jobs, and hunger crisis in the city, why Toronto area food banks are under more pressure than ever before. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
Debris from an old satellite is threatening the crew of the International Space Station.
The space junk forced the 7 astronauts to seek shelter today just in case. The crew temporarily retreated into the docked capsules after being informed of the threat. They later closed the hatches between the space station compartments as a precaution. The debris is from a Russian satellite that was destroyed during a weapons test. NASA says the threat may continue for another couple of days.
Here on Earth, there is a wind chill tonight, the potential for flurries. Mm-hmm. Michelle, what do you think we'll see tonight?
Well, if depending on where you are in the GTA or in southern Ontario really dictates what you will see, because we do have persistent streams coming off of the upper Great Lakes here, and it's translating into a lot of snow for some people, even as far south as northern York region, northern Durham region. Here in the city of Toronto proper, this could be a mix of rain and snow and or transitioning over to flurries as we drop below zero, but not a lot of accumulating snow. If you're in, say, Newmarket, this could be 2 to 4 centimeters for you. And we're also seeing a lot of activity coming through the Stratford area down towards Hamilton and the Niagara region. So we do have watches and warnings in place for those regions. Of course, poor driving conditions, poor visibility there. So watch out for that on the roads through the overnight. As we get into tomorrow, going from -2 overnight up to 7, we'll have morning flurries. So the roads still could be quite slick. And then our temperatures bump up considerably on Wednesday to 14 with rain. Back to you, Michelle.
We appreciate the heads up. Thank you. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.